Hi, guys.
Hi.
We have the pleasure of Emily Blanchard joining us this evening. Emily is an experienced technical recruiter who's worked with many different small to medium-sized tech companies here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Do you mind sharing what you were doing most recently and what you're up to next?
Sure. Most recently, I've been working with Postmates. I joined them a couple years ago when the team was very small, about 20 engineers, and helped to grow that team to about 80. And was very excited to see their success and accomplishment continue as a result of building a strong engineering team.
So you're now soon to be joining Instacart as well?
Yes, I just left Postmates last week, and at the end of the month, I'll be a part of the Instacart recruiting team, and I'll be focused on similar activities and help them continue their success.
So you've primarily recruited for technical roles, is that right?
Yes, primarily technical roles with some exceptions. I've worked with a lot of small companies, or should I use the word tiny?
sure.
Like five people to begin with.
Yeah.
And sometimes they would need something like a CFO or an office manager or someone doing analysis and data. But for the most part, always technology companies. And for the most part, focused on engineering. That's what I love.
So one of the crazy problems that a lot of candidates face that I wanted to ask you on behalf of those candidates is the post-interview. After interviewing somewhere for an engineering role or otherwise, oftentimes if the answer is going to be no, that you're not going to get the role that you were interviewing for, there's radio silence. So
right.
You're not the only recruiter in the world, but from the recruiter's perspective,
sure.
And from maybe a legal perspective, why don't candidates often hear feedback about how they did in their
sure.
technical interviews?
Sure. So that's a tough one for me because as a person, knowing a lot about them as we get to the road of not hiring them, I feel like I'd love to share everything. However, legal complications can come in when you share too much information or the way that the information is conveyed opens things up for debate.
Mm.
So, for example, I can say, hey, you did really well on the design portion. You did great. Your coding was fast. It was clean, readable. But then going to something like a con is your communication skills weren't quite where we need them to be. And then a question mark goes, well, what do they mean by that? Where do they need them to be? And that's an intangible. And so that can just open up debate with the recruiter, not necessarily escalating to a legal issue at that point. And some of the other things is like, you know, the candidate thinks they're great with algorithms or, you know, their testing or writing the unit tests was amazing, but they're not. But that's based on what we think. So those kinds of things are very, very touchy.
It sounds like, besides opening it up for debate, those debates are a waste of your time.
thank you, yes.
Yeah.
They're also very time intensive because you have to be careful with the wording.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I let them know when they're on site, we're going to have a debrief, everybody's going to get together and talk about it, the feedback, and I'll give you some feedback at a very high level, but verbally tell them this is to be helpful, not to be opened up for debate. And so then I kind of have a way of very quickly saying these are the pros, these are the cons, and for the most part, they agree. So that's a good thing. Things that are really, really bad that could happen.
Yeah.
The code from their interview could end up on a site like Glassdoor.
Sure.
And it's not just giving away the interview questions. It's leaving them up to interpretation. And bitter people are usually the ones that, I guess, I don't know, bitter is a good word, but overconfident people can tend to just take it way too far.
And, makes sense.
Yeah. So we try to stay away from that. But as a person that is a recruiter, I put a lot of thought into it.
For candidates who are getting a lot of no's.
Yeah.
And are not getting a lot of feedback, or who may not even yet have tried to solicit feedback from any of the companies they applied to, what are some ways that people who are getting a lot of no's can get some objective feedback about what it is that might be a straight up no for that they're something that they're committing an error in the interview process?
Right. That's a really good question. Sometimes, well, I don't address these directly with candidates, but I want to. And probably unique in some ways that I actually give some feedback. Some companies you just never hear from again. And I can hear that from candidates. I'm like, that is awful. You put a lot of time in, we put a lot of time in. But I feel like an engineer getting a no might know where their weaknesses are and have realized that they could have come out in the interview. As opposed to just being this like, hey, I'm great, I did everything perfectly. But also when you're in an interview, the engineers that I've trained in these situations, they're trained very carefully to know how to hint and nudge and a candidate should be able to pick up on that.
Yeah.
And if they can't, then they're repeating. It's like Groundhog's Day, interview after interview after interview. Well, and I ask in my very first call, how many interviews have you been on? And, you know, what have the results been like? And if they say something like, I've been 10 interviews and, you know, nothing's worked out. And I'll say, what do you think about that? And some have very thoughtful answers. Others, oh, I don't know. You know, screw the company. Da-da-da. Like, they're not going to get anywhere with me. They're not going to move forward. So constructive ways is for them to pick up on cues.
Are there good ways to practice?
Yeah, there's a lot. There are a lot of good ways. So that's something. If somebody's less experienced, there's a site called LeetCode. There's some pretty basic exercises you can do there just to hone your skills and to freshen up. If it's somebody that's been in the same job for a couple years, a mistake they can make is just start interviewing, thinking they're fine because they're really good at what they do, where they do it now. So they kind of need to step back and think about it and kind of map out, okay, I'm at this company now. Let me look at what this company does. And also, let me just ask, like, what are some of the things? Because I want to hire people. I don't want to say no, but somebody that's more experienced can make their different mistakes. Yeah, I think keeping sharp. There's a ton of GitHub projects out there that, you know, some of them might resonate with you and contributing. If you don't have time for that, but you're serious, I'm going to switch jobs, I'm going to get a new job, then maybe you haven't worked with algorithms for a really long time.
Sure.
You know, so maybe you code in Java and not Python, and you're not going to have to code in Python, but why not get a better understanding of the questions to ask and the things to ask? Or maybe, you know, databases, you know, writing queries, understanding tables, knowing about databases is important, but they might not have had that as part of their job.
Yeah.
So brush up, figure that out. So
it sounds like there's a lot of candidates who may be unaware of where they're at in the marketplace. Like somebody who's been in a job for 2 years, despite having these new 2 years of experience under the belt, they may not be practiced in the interview format that they're going to encounter in applying for jobs. Is that what you're saying?
I look to work at companies that have interview questions or the interviews are happening within the context of the real world problems they're facing. So it's less of like studying, I guess, the quizzes. Mm-hmm. But when you stay somewhere, you're exactly right. You stay somewhere for some time, which is great. Don't fool yourself into thinking you're ready to interview. Mm-hmm. Interviews are stressful. Even role playing or, you know, practicing the communication or interviewing at a few companies you know you don't want to work for. Mm-hmm. And to get that under your belt. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then other people are just naturals.
So you grew the team at Postmates, I guess the engineering team, mm-hmm. to 80 people headcount?
That's correct. I hired about 46 engineers while I was there in the last 2 years.
That is a tremendous amount of people, in my opinion. What kind of volume of candidates did you see in your role as the recruiter there, the senior most position recruiter for technical hires? How many applications a week did you guys get, for example? I know you were telling me before that the inbound applications you guys received aren't as high fidelity, actually, yeah. as some of the other techniques that you guys use right. to find candidates. So for people who are sending out their resume through people's careers pages on their websites, what are they up against? How many other applications?
So they're, number one, they're up against themselves, because for the most part, they're not reading descriptions. They know nothing about the company. They're just like, I want a job, I want a job, I want a job. The other thing they're up against is levels of experience. So many inexperienced people apply not knowing that, you know, if they would have read the website, this is probably not going to work out. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be one more no. Oh, somebody else doesn't want me. But we do, but not now. But the inbounds, every Saturday morning, I would go through working like on 4 or 5 different positions. We call them recs at once. And the back-end rec would have at least 80. Mm-hmm. And so wow. I didn't do it during the week because I'd have to plow through.
Yeah.
I'd say out of 80, there are probably 5 I'd want to talk to.
That is a very small percentage.
Yeah, another 5 I would forward to an engineer to look at their GitHub mm-hmm. accounts, because I can look at a GitHub account and tell, like, when were their commits? What were their commits? What were they for? Consistent activity? And if that's the case, then I'll have someone look at it. Usually it's like, yeah, but nothing remarkable. So the other sources definitely are lower numbers, but far better results.
So of the 46 mm-hmm. technical hires that you brought into Postmates, how many of them came in through inbound, through them applying for jobs? Just ballpark.
I'd say, well, I think of 2 major, like, really, really great ones. And 2 others, so like, oh my gosh, probably 6 in 2 years that applied.
So 6 out of 46. I can't do the arithmetic off the top of my head, but that sounds like a very small fraction. Yeah. I guess the takeaway for people who are job searching is that if you're senior enough, you'll be reached out too. Is that a fair thing?
No, a lot of senior people coming from certain types of companies are just really not going to be good. Not going to be what we would be looking for.
So even candidates who you guys reach out to may end up not being good fits?
Not me. I won't reach out to anybody. I don't reach out to anybody that doesn't seem like a good fit. But the inbounds, somebody could have 10 years at Oracle or, you know, 5 years at Visa or, you know, 3 at Salesforce. It's like there's certain companies that just don't translate very well to web services mm-hmm. or marketplaces. But sourcing, I can reach out to. Sourcing means I'm cold reaching out to people. And that can be, I don't know, like 50 a week.
Okay. And that's via email, LinkedIn messages?
Via email. I don't really do LinkedIn messages because it's just so much noise on there.
Okay.
But I have a way of getting email. I'd say out of 50, 40 open it.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty high open rate. That's 80%
they read it.
Open rate.
Yeah, because I could see that they're opening.
Yeah.
And then maybe 10 will say, thank you so much. 4 might say, check back at this date. And then another 5 or 6 want to talk. And usually the 5 or 6 are interested, but not necessarily looking. Sometimes you can hook that, but it depends on why. But I'd say 3 a week that you talk to from just blind sourcing turn out to be really good.
So,
and I'd say in a month, probably hiring 2 of them.
Okay. And that adds up to a month, 12 months a year, that's 24. And
yeah.
Then for 2 years, you get 46 hires or so.
Well,
2 years.
Then you have employee referrals.
Ah.
And then you have things like hired.
I know this is kind of your magic sauce, and feel free to punt on this question.
Yeah.
But you mentioned this number, 50 people you might email a week.
Yeah.
Where do you find these 50 people? How do you get their email addresses and whatnot?
So I used to go on LinkedIn and use this thing called Connectifier. Connectifier is this plugin. It's just a Chrome plugin. And it shows email address, GitHub, social networks, multiple email addresses if you need them. Mm. But now, Connectifier got bought by LinkedIn. I don't know what they're doing, but there's this thing called Intello.
Okay.
Intello is another search tool.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can put in Boolean searches or company searches and keywords, terms, and then pull up people. And then their email is within Intello, so you
okay.
can actually send it through there. So you don't have to copy-paste it, use Yesware, and put it. Send it in another way. So that,
okay.
I think, is sped up. And that's a pretty early stage company.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing really well. And I think the tool is useful because it's so consolidated.
So Intello, Yesware, for people who are not aware of this, there are a lot of tools available to people in sales roles or recruiting roles,
mm-hmm.
or any customer-facing
mm-hmm.
role, however you define customer, that allow the email sender to track whether you have
yes.
read the email they have sent you.
And if you've opened it, clicked a link.
Yeah.
And if you opened it again.
Yeah. So these are all positive signals that you might give off to recruiters if they email you. So if you wonder why they're following up with you, it might be because they really are interested in you, for
mm-hmm.
one. But it may be also that they can see that you're engaging with their solicitation
mm-hmm.
about a role that they think you might be a good fit for. So
yeah, and you can automate follow-ups.
Yeah, yeah. So that follow-up email. Yeah.
But then you have to make it, it has to, like, and it is sound personal.
Yeah. So what types of personalizing, I mean, this is kind of into the secret sauce, I know, but what types of personalizing are recipients on the other end of your recruiting emails
uh-huh.
getting? Like, how do you get personalization in people's emails?
So when I'm reading through a profile, some profiles have nothing. So, meaning there's no descriptions under, like, what you did. It's just company names.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have to, like, map that to what I know about the company or look at the company stack. So I could assume that somebody at Lyft, for example, has experience with highly available distributed systems because they're scaling so quickly they're beyond a monolithic code base. So if there's nothing there, I can say, hey, I see, you know, you're in on-demand marketplaces, or and I'm not exactly sure what you're doing over there, but I know there's some very complicated, interesting things that you must be working on. If they call out what they're doing, and it says, you know, I am doing front-end work with React and JavaScript, and I love sailing or something like that, then it's a lot easier because mm-hmm. you can craft it around the keywords, but not just what their profile says. First, you need to focus on that because you're interested in them, but then you need to dangle out something that your company's working on mm-hmm. to say, oh,
there's a reason I'm doing this here.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, she's right. I do these things. And maybe something's going on that they're looking around. Oh, and then she said, these are the things that I could be working on. So trying to map it there. And sometimes for growth, if somebody's like, I'm into learning and career growth, like, I don't know how that's going there, but I won't lie, like, you know, if there's the opportunity.
For sure, for sure.
So yeah, just try to customize it.
So you've described some of the conversion rates of people who receive emails or who apply through the job site.
Mm-hmm.
What the rate at which they get a phone screen, for example. One of the things hard about technical recruiting is getting people to agree to spend their time on different stages of a technical mm-hmm. Hiring process,
yep.
particularly the skills test. So
yeah.
what does the conversion rate look like, or do you worry at all about the conversion rate of convincing candidates it's worth their time to do a skills test or a skills assessment?
Yeah, it's a big worry. Yeah. And it's sometimes a battle with how do we frame this. The engineer thinks, oh, they'll spend this much time. I'm like, no. You know, it's too much to ask. You've got to frame it as something interesting and fun. It has to be something interesting and fun. If they have like three other things going on and an offer on the table, then I'm going to be creative and figure out a way to bypass that.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer not to work with tasks. I prefer the technical screening be a selected group of questions that makes sense for like Skype and CoderPad, so it's more interactive. And if I get pushback again on any kind of a task, then I'll go talk to somebody about it.
Mm.
But pushback is also an indication, like, how interested are you?
Yeah,
and so it's like flipping it, like, hey, it's okay. You don't want to do this? That's fine. You know, it's our sanity check, and we don't want to waste your time coming in for 5 hours. If you couldn't get through this.
I think one of the things I worry a lot about for candidates is candidates being able to detect whether the employer or the recruiter has skin in the game. So one of the things that I encourage candidates for technical roles to do is if they're going to agree to doing a technical screen or a skills assessment of some kind, make sure that an employee of the company you're looking for employment from is also spending time with you
right.
while you do that test.
Right.
That's a good way to guarantee that they have skin in the game.
Right.
that they sink a cost into you as a candidate versus the alternative, which is using recruiting tools like HackerRank, where you go and you do a skills assessment
right.
where the employer has no skin in the game.
And it takes the person out of it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, here, take a number.
Yeah. Well, this has been extremely educational. I think we all want to say thanks to Emily for joining us.
Thank you. And feel free to reach out to me if you have questions or are even interested in finding out more about what Instacart's up to and the types of things we're working on and how you might be able to make an impact and contribute in positive ways.
Awesome. So yeah, check out Instacart's jobs page. And maybe perhaps try reaching out directly to Emily.
Yeah, and if you do look at the jobs page or any other jobs page, just read it before you apply. Don't be a front-end engineer and accidentally apply to a back-end position.
All right. Well, thanks, Emily.
Cool.
Cool.
Thanks. Bye.